A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
My Weird Prompts is a community-driven initiative exploring how AI can fuel curiosity and uncover the fascinating ways our world works. GPU compute for this podcast is generously provided by Modal. Learn more at modal.com.
You know, Korn, I was looking at the stack of half-finished notebooks on my desk this morning, spiral-bound, leather-clad, yellow legal pads, and I felt this strange, heavy wave of modern guilt. It is that classic tension we all feel now. The desire to be organized, the need for that tactile spark of creativity, but also the nagging realization that I am essentially a one-man deforestation machine.
Guilt is a heavy way to start the morning, Herman. Was it truly guilt about the trees, or was it that moment of clarity where you realized your handwriting has devolved into something that looks like a caffeinated spider crawling across the page? And by the way, for the folks joining us for the first time, I am Corn Popperberry, and that guilt-ridden voice belongs to my brother Herman.
I will have you know my handwriting has a certain calligraphic charm if you squint hard enough and perhaps turn the page 45 degrees. But no, it was the sheer volume of paper waste. Our housemate Daniel actually sent us a prompt about this exact struggle, and it really struck a chord. He is caught in what we are calling the analog-digital paradox. He loves the tactile experience of writing, the memory retention you get from longhand, and especially that psychological hit of crossing a task off a physical list. But he hates the clutter, the waste, and the fact that his analog life does not sync with his digital one.
It is the ultimate productivity trap of 2026. We want the cognitive benefits of the Stone Age with the environmental footprint of the Space Age. Daniel is looking for that middle ground where you do not have to sacrifice the feel of a pen on a surface just to stay digital and sustainable. He asked us specifically about e-ink tablets and the mysterious lack of high-quality whiteboard markers.
And it is fascinating because we often think of technology as this thing that constantly gets cheaper and more accessible. We assume that eventually a digital notebook will cost the same as a pack of Bic pens. But when you look at the world of e-ink and premium stationery, the trend lines are doing some very weird counterintuitive things. Today, we are going to dive into why that paperless dream is actually getting more expensive. And we are also going to reveal a hidden world of professional stationery that Daniel did not even know existed.
I love a good reveal. People think the whiteboard marker market is just a sea of disposable plastic and chemical smells, but there is a rabbit hole there that goes surprisingly deep. But before we get to the ink and aluminum, let us talk about the high-tech side of this paradox. The e-ink tablet. This was supposed to be the final form of the notebook, right?
That was the promise. The idea was that e-ink, like the Remarkable or the Books devices, would eventually become the affordable, universal replacement for the yellow legal pad. But if you look at the market today, in mid-March of 2026, that is not exactly what happened. In fact, the price of entry for a high-quality writing experience has actually gone up.
Which feels wrong. We are taught that Moore's Law means everything gets cheaper. Why is e-ink the exception?
It comes down to a fascinating bit of supply chain drama. The actual film technology, the tiny microcapsules of black and white pigment, is still largely controlled by a very small number of players, primarily e-ink holdings. Because they have such a massive grip on the patents and the manufacturing, the cost of the panels themselves has stayed stubbornly high. There is no generic e-ink screen that a startup can just buy for $5.
And then you add the R&D costs of trying to solve the latency problem. That is the big one for Daniel and anyone who cares about the feel. If I move a pen and the line appears 50 milliseconds later, my brain rejects it. It feels like I'm dragging a stick through honey. It breaks the tactile feedback loop we talk about so often.
Precisely. To get that latency down to under 20 milliseconds, which is the threshold where it starts to feel like real ink, you need serious processing power and very specialized display controllers. So, instead of getting cheaper, the top end of the market has actually moved up in price. We are seeing devices like the Remarkable Paper Pro or the high-end BooksNote Max pushing well into the $600 to $800 range.
$800 for a digital notebook. Think about the sheer volume of high-quality paper notebooks you could buy for $800. You could probably fill a small home library with premium Leuchtturm 1917 journals for that price. You could buy enough legal pads to last you until the 22nd century.
That is the heart of the paradox. You're paying a massive premium to mimic a 5-cent experience. But for someone like Daniel, or anyone who writes thousands of pages a year, the value proposition changes when you factor in the friction of physical paper. It is not just about the cost of the paper, it is about the searchability, the backup, and the fact that your desk does not look like a recycling bin exploded. But Daniel's concern was about the feel. He does not want to write on glass.
And he is right to be wary. A lot of people try writing on an iPad with an Apple Pencil, and they hate it. It feels like writing with a nail on a window pane. It is glass on plastic. It is slippery. There is no friction, no tooth. That is why the specialized e-ink tablets have leaned so hard into material science.
The Remarkable Paper Pro is the current king of this. They use what they call their canvas display. It is not just a screen, it is a multi-layered stack with a textured surface designed to have the exact same friction coefficient as paper. When you use their specific marker tips, which are actually made of a high-density felt, they wear down over time just like a pencil lead would. That microscopic friction is what tells your brain, hey, we are doing real work here. It triggers the same neurological pathways as analog writing.
I have been testing the BooksGo 10.3 recently, and I was surprised by how much they have closed the gap without the $800 price tag. It is a bit more of an open system because it runs Android, which appeals to the need for flexibility, but the writing feel is still excellent. However, there is a catch that I think Daniel needs to be warned about, and that is what I call subscription creep.
Oh, do not get me started on the subscription models for hardware. It is becoming a real plague in the productivity space.
It is particularly egregious here. The Remarkable Kinect subscription, for example. You buy this beautiful, expensive piece of hardware, and then if you want the basic ability to sync your notes to the cloud or edit them on your desktop, they want a monthly fee. It feels like you're renting a notebook that you already paid for. It is a classic move to create recurring revenue, but it feels like a betrayal of the analog spirit these devices are supposed to embody.
That is why I often point people toward the Books ecosystem or even the Kindle Scribe if they are already in the Amazon world. The Scribe is actually the value leader right now because Amazon can afford to subsidize the hardware to keep you in their bookstore. But the Scribe feels a bit like a walled garden. You are limited in how you can get your notes out. If Daniel wants that pure, focused writing experience without the digital leash, he might be better off looking at the secondhand market for a Remarkable 2. You can find them for a fraction of the price of the new Pro models, and the writing experience is still 90% of the way there.
That is a solid tip, but let us pivot for a second, because Daniel's prompt had a second half that I think is even more interesting because it is so overlooked, the whiteboard marker gap. He feels like there is no such thing as a premium, refillable, high-quality whiteboard marker. He is tired of those squeaky, disposable plastic sticks that run out of ink after 3 brainstorming sessions and then end up in a landfill.
It is a fair point. If you go to any big box office supply store, your options are basically limited to the standard brands that have not changed their design since the 1990s. They feel cheap because they are meant to be cheap. They are treated as consumables, like paper clips or rubber bands. It is a use it and lose it philosophy.
But this is where the big reveal comes in. Daniel, if you are listening, the market gap you are seeing is not a manufacturing gap. It is a retail gap. The high-end, professional, sustainable whiteboard markers exist, but you will never find them at a standard office supply store. You have to go to the places where the stationery nerds hang out.
You mean the sites like JetPens or ColePens? The places where people argue about the viscosity of fountain pen ink?
And the king of this specific hill is a company called OSPen. They are an Australian brand, and they make exactly what Daniel is dreaming of. We are talking about markers with recycled aluminum barrels. They have a weight to them. They have a grip that feels like a professional tool rather than a toy.
Aluminum barrels for a whiteboard marker? That sounds like something an architect or a high-end industrial designer would use.
It is. And the best part is that they are fully modular. When the ink runs out, you do not throw the marker away. You just pop the back off and refill it from a bottle of high-quality ink. If the nib gets frayed because you were writing too hard during a particularly intense strategy session, you just pull the nib out and put a new one in. It is the antithesis of the disposable culture Daniel is trying to avoid.
That is brilliant. It is essentially a fountain pen for your whiteboard. Think about the waste reduction there. Instead of throwing away dozens of plastic tubes every year, you have one set of 4 or 6 markers that could literally last you a decade.
The numbers on that are actually pretty staggering. If you look at a 5-year period, using a refillable system like OSPEN can reduce your plastic waste by up to 90% compared to disposables. And the ink quality is often better because it is not designed to sit in a warehouse for 3 years in a sealed plastic tube. It is fresh, it is vibrant, and it does not have that overwhelming chemical odor that makes you feel like you are losing brain cells during a meeting.
It is funny how we have this blind spot for certain tools. We will spend $2,000 on a laptop and then use a 10-cent pen that skips and smears. There is a real psychological benefit to using a tool that feels substantial. We talked about this back in episode 859 when we were discussing keyboard efficiency. When your input device feels high quality, your output often follows suit. It is about removing the micro frustrations that interrupt your flow.
It is the tactile feedback loop again. When I am at a whiteboard with a cheap dry marker, I am thinking about the marker. I am frustrated by the fading lines. I am annoyed by the squeak. But when you have a smooth, high-flow marker like a Pilot Board Master, which is another great refillable option, the tool disappears. You are just thinking about the ideas.
I am glad you mentioned the Pilot Board Master. That is a great middle ground for someone who might not want to jump all the way into the aluminum barrel world of OSPEN. The Boardmaster uses a cartridge system. It is made from a high percentage of recycled materials, and when it runs out, you just swap in a new ink cartridge. It is very clean, very efficient, and the ink is incredibly vibrant.
And that vibrancy matters. Disposable markers often use cheaper pigments to keep costs down. When you move into the refillable space, the ink quality jumps up. It is easier to erase. It does not ghost on the board as much, and it is just more pleasant to look at. It turns a whiteboard from a messy scratch pad into a high-contrast information radiator.
So the answer to Daniel's dilemma isn't necessarily just going digital. It is about choosing better analog tools. It is the shift from disposable culture to heirloom culture, even for something as simple as a marker.
It is about moving away from the idea that everything in our office should be a commodity. This reminds me of our discussion in episode 425 about the arc of deprecation. We talked about how some old technologies, like paper or whiteboards, are actually the final form of that specific tool. You can try to digitize them, you can try to put them on a screen, but you often end up adding more friction than you remove.
Right. The whiteboard is the ultimate low-friction information radiator. You walk up, you pick up a pen, you draw. No booting up, no syncing, no battery to charge. If you can make that experience sustainable by using refillable markers, you have solved the paradox without needing a single microchip.
Although, I will say, there is a certain magic to the hybrid approach. I know people who use the high-end refillable markers on a physical whiteboard, and then they use an app like Rocketbook, or even just the built-in document scanner on their phone, to digitize the board when they are done. You get the tactile flow of the analog, and the organizational power of the digital.
That seems like the most rational path for someone like Daniel. Use the e-ink tablet for personal notes and deep work where you need to archive everything, but keep a physical whiteboard with premium markers for that high-energy brainstorming and task crossing. But let us talk about the science for a second, because Daniel mentioned the memory benefits of handwriting. Is that just a feeling, or is there data there?
Oh, there is real neurological research here. When you write by hand, you are engaging a much more complex motor circuit in your brain than when you are typing. Typing is essentially the same motion for every letter, just a different location. But writing a G is fundamentally different from writing an L. Your brain has to plan and execute those distinct shapes. You are literally carving those ideas into your memory with the movement of your hand.
I have seen those studies from the University of Tokyo and elsewhere. that show that students who take notes by hand actually synthesize the information better because you cannot write as fast as someone can talk. You are forced to summarize, to rephrase, and to prioritize in real time. Typing is just transcription, writing is processing.
That is why I always tell people, typing is for archiving, but handwriting is for thinking. If you want to understand something, write it down. If you just want to store it, type it. And if you are going to be doing all that thinking by hand, you might as well have a pen or a marker that does not make your hand cramp up after 10 minutes.
Which brings us back to the stationary nerdery. If Daniel really wants to fall down the rabbit hole, he should look at things like the Staedtler Lumocolor line. They have these permanent and non-permanent markers that are used by professionals in labs and film sets because they are so precise. They are like the surgical instruments of the marker world.
Oh, the Lumocolors are legendary. They have that specific click. When you put the cap on that, just screams German engineering. It is that level of detail that makes you actually want to use the tool. It is the same reason people get obsessed with mechanical keyboards. It is about turning a mundane task into a sensory experience.
It is funny how we are sitting here in 2026, talking about Australian markers and German engineering, all to solve a problem that is essentially about how we interface with our own thoughts. But it matters. Our environment and our tools shape our mental state. If your tools feel like trash, your thoughts can start to feel like trash.
They really do. If your desk is covered in half-empty, dried-out plastic markers and scraps of paper, your mind is going to feel cluttered. But if you have one high-quality e-ink device and one set of premium, refillable markers, you have created a system that is both minimalist and incredibly powerful. You have removed the visual noise of waste.
So, if we are looking at the practical takeaways for Daniel, where do we start? I think step one is a reality check on the e-ink tablets. Do not buy one thinking it is going to save you money over paper in the short term. The break-even point against 5-Sed notebooks is decades away. Buy it because you want a focused, distraction-free environment for your thoughts.
Agreed. And if you do buy one, look at the BooksGo 10.3 if you want the best screen for the money right now. It is an open system and very thin. Or look for a used Remarkable 2 if you want that pure distraction-free paper feel without the $800 price tag of the new color models. And for heaven's sake, check the subscription terms before you click buy. Do not get trapped in a monthly fee just to see your own notes on your phone.
And step two, the markers. Daniel, stop buying the 12 packs of disposables at the supermarket. Go to a specialty site like JetPens. Look up OSPen or the Pilot Board Master System. Spend the $30 or $40 up front for a set that you can refill. It will feel better in your hand, it will look better on the board, and you will never have to throw a plastic marker in the trash again. It is a one-time investment in a better experience.
It is a small change, but it is one of those things that gives you a little boost every time you use it. It is that sense of using a professional tool. It is the difference between driving a rental car and driving your own well-maintained vehicle. You take care of it, and it takes care of you.
I think there is also a broader lesson here about the analog-digital paradox. We often think that the solution to every problem is more technology, more features, more pixels. But sometimes the solution is just a better version of the thing we have been using for 100 years. A refillable pen is a very old idea that is suddenly very relevant again because it solves the sustainability problem without adding digital friction.
It is the circular economy in action. We are rediscovering that durability and repairability are actually the ultimate high-tech features. An aluminum marker that you can fix yourself is, in many ways, more advanced than a disposable one that is designed to be obsolete in a month. It represents a different kind of progress, one that values longevity over convenience.
That is a great point. It is about shifting our mindset from being consumers to being stewards of our tools. Whether it is a digital tablet or a physical pen, if we choose things that are built to last, we are solving both the productivity problem and the sustainability problem at the same time. We are getting out of that disposable loop.
And it makes the work more fun. I mean, let us be honest, there is a non-zero part of this that is just about the joy of having cool gear. And there is nothing wrong with that if the gear actually helps you do better work and feel better about your impact on the planet.
I am actually feeling inspired to go clean out my pen drawer now. I think I have about 20 half-dead ballpoints that need to be retired in favor of one good refillable fountain pen or a high-quality rollerball.
Just make sure you recycle them properly, Herman. Do not let that guilt come back tomorrow morning. There are specialized recycling programs for pens and markers now. TerraCycle has a great one.
I will do my best. You know, this whole conversation really highlights why I love doing this show. We can start with a simple question about markers and end up talking about the neurological basis of memory, the economics of display manufacturing, and the ethics of hardware as a service.
It is all connected. That is the beauty of it. Whether we are talking about geopolitics or stationery, it is all about understanding the systems that run our world and finding the best way to navigate them. We are all just trying to find the best way to get the ideas out of our heads and into the world.
Well, I think we have given Daniel plenty to chew on, from the high-end microcapsules of e-ink to the aluminum barrels of Australian markers. The paradox is solvable if you are willing to look in the right places and invest in quality over quantity.
And if you are willing to spend a little more up front to save a lot more in the long run, both for your wallet and for the planet, it is the buy it for life mentality applied to the office.
That is a perfect place to wrap it up. This has been a fun break from our usual heavy topics. It is good to remember that the tools we use in our daily lives deserve just as much scrutiny as the big global trends. They are the interface through which we experience everything else.
If you found this deep dive into the world of e-ink and refillable markers useful, or if you have your own favorite stationery secrets that we missed, maybe a specific ink brand or a hidden gem of a notebook, we would love to hear from you.
Definitely. And hey, if you are enjoying my weird prompts, please take a second to leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It really does help other people find the show and join our little community of curious minds. We are growing every week, and it is all thanks to you folks sharing the episodes.
It really does make a difference. We see every one of those reviews, and we truly appreciate the support. It keeps the lights on and the markers filled.
You can find all our past episodes, including the ones we mentioned today, like episode 425 on the Arc of Deprecation, over at myweirdprompts.com. We have a full archive there and an RSS feed if you want to subscribe directly.
And if you are on Telegram, just search for My Weird Prompts to join our channel. We post every time a new episode drops, and we often share links to the tools and research we talk about in the episodes.
Thanks to Daniel for the great prompt that sparked this whole journey today. It is always fun to tackle these tactile dilemmas. It reminds us that the how of our work is just as important as the what.
Indeed. Until next time, I am Corin Poppleberry.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will catch you in the next one.
Take care, everyone. Keep writing, keep thinking, and keep those whiteboards clean.
Goodbye for now.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where our thoughts go from slow takes to facts on cue. We change and follow through. My Weird Prompts.